This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. October 6th through 12th marked Fire Prevention Week 2024. So today, we're going to talk about burn injuries, what to do and what not to do when the burn occurs, what a designated burn center has to offer, and tips to prevent fires and burn injuries in your home and at work. Our guest today is Dr. William Hughes, Clinical Assistant Professor of Surgery at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College of Thomas Jefferson University, and the Medical Director of the Jefferson Burn Center at the Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, Bill, you have a great history and so much experience. If you would, bring us back to the St. Agnes Hospital in South Philly when that existed. That was a burn center extraordinaire, and then it moved to Temple and now Jeff.
Yes. So the original burn center started in 1974 at St. Agnes Hospital with my mentor, Dr. Fred DeClement. Around the same time, this is when burn care was first coming about in the city of Philadelphia, Chester Crozier also opened their burn center under Dr. Silvers and then under Dr. Ed Hartford later. And presently it's being run by my friend, Linwood Pace. And in 1980, they actually started doing burns at St. Christopher's, and Stu Holnick opened up that unit. Now, I joined Dr. DeClement after my residency in the end of the 90s, and we moved to Temple, and I was there for almost 20 years. We opened that burn unit, and presently I'm at Jefferson doing adult burns.
Mm-hmm. And so you've seen burn care at three different institutions, which really enriches your experience and what you can provide for patients. So I guess the most important first step is how to classify a burn. You look at how much body surface area has been affected and then try to measure the depth. Let's talk about that a little bit. I know from my little bit of reading, when I was a GI fellow in New York, I was at Sloan Kettering Cornell. We did GI training, of course. Then I did a year of TPN. We'll talk about that. But I remember seeing the burn patients in the burn center there, and what a humbling experience. So how do you assess the damage a patient has sustained?
Well, what we look at is the burn depth. And most people know first, second, and third degree. And what we try to tell our patients is the body has two layers of skin. There's the outside layer, which is the epidermis that we all see. And that is what forms a blister, like if you ever had a blister from a shoe that's too hot. Underneath the epidermis is the more important layer. That's the dermis. The dermis actually makes the top layer of skin, and that has the nerves, the blood vessels, the hair follicles, and the sweat glands. And then underneath the dermis is the fat layer, the subcutaneous tissue. So when you have a first-degree burn, like a sunburn, that top layer gets red, but it does not blister because it doesn't go all the way through. When you have a partial or second-degree burn, that goes through the epidermis into the dermal layer, and you lose that top layer, but underneath it looks red and wet, which is important because that layer is alive. Now, when you have a full thickness burn or a third degree, it's the same terminology. It goes through the both layers of the skin into the subcutaneous tissue. And the problem with that is now that dermal layer is dead and it cannot make that top layer of skin. So usually those are ones that end up getting operated on unless they're a smaller size. And we also talk about total body surface area. So an adult, you know, normal size adult, we have about 2 square meters of skin, and a newborn has about 0.2 square meters of skin. And we kind of divided what we call the rule of nines, where your head's about 9% of your body surface area. Your arms are 9% each. Front and back of your chest are 18% each. And the legs are each 18%. So you could figure out how much of the body surface area is burned. Of course, with children, when they're born, their heads are a little larger. They're actually 18%. And until about they turn 9, they get to normal.
But that's really helpful, Bill. That was such a clear explanation, because when you hear that a person has suffered 70% of their body surface, now it helps listeners understand how that's determined. And I'm from what I understand, an accurate classification is not always possible initially, because the burn can evolve a little bit and it can take up to maybe 2 or 3 weeks before you determine the level of the depth. Yes?
It does. It will evolve. We usually will sometimes see changing of, like when we figure out a total body surface area, when we're doing our resuscitation, we only count the second and third degree burn, not the first degree burns. And over the space of 24 to 48 hours, this is why resuscitation is so important. We want to get blood flow to that skin to keep it from converting. So if you have a second degree burn, if you don't have good resuscitation, good blood flow, it could convert to full thickness, which would require grafting. It even sometimes when you see it looks a little bit red as a first degree burn, it will sometimes blister and lose the top layer of skin. Usually, though, it's about, 1, 2, or 3 days that we really worry about that happening.
So in broad thinking for our listeners, a first degree burn probably heals within 3 to 6 days, and it's painful, but it's dry and it's red. Second degree, it's a little deeper. You're going to see blisters. It's painful, which you're saying is a good sign. It means the nerve endings are still intact in that dermis layer. But if it extends through both layers of skin down through the subcutaneous fat to muscle, it doesn't hurt because you've killed the nerve endings. And that's not, then those people need the therapy and need surgery sometimes.
Well, I will say second degree burns should heal. We like to see them heal in about 2 weeks' time. Sometimes we do have some deeper ones that still have some elements that may take 3 weeks to heal. A lot of people will say third degree burns don't hurt, but I think that's a bit of a misnomer, because there are other nerves underneath the skin that tell you something's wrong. I think more importantly, we like to say the third degree burns don't have sensation. So if you touch a second degree burn with what we call 2-point discrimination, like with the old compasses, that we used to use in geography, they can feel the 2 points and discriminate between them. If you do that on a full thickness burn, they can't feel it. So those superficial nerves are more burned. Now, some people may say, yes, it does hurt a little bit less than it may, but I can tell you have a third degree burn, a decent size, it's still going to be a very painful injury.
Well, we think of a burn center as people with really catastrophic burns, but we had a good conversation the other day, and you explained that the majority of injuries you see are minor burns, still need the appropriate attention, and you still have to be very careful how you classify. Tell us, if you would, what are some of the typical burns that you see?
Well, we treat all kinds of burns. And, when you think of burns, there's usually flame burns, scald burns, of course, from hot liquids, electrical burns, chemical burns, even radiation injuries because of cancer therapies. So most of what we see, kind of fall into those groups. And as you did mention, a lot of the big catastrophic burns, fortunately, have decreased over the past couple decades. That big 50, 60% burn, we still usually have those. But a lot of them are a lot smaller, 10, 15, 20% burns. which can still be very deep and require surgery. And could have, you know, most people when they get burned, unfortunately, it's the hands and the face that are out there. And sometimes that's a little deeper. So we have, you know, our occupational therapist, our physical therapist to also help these patients get back to their activities of daily living, help with dressings and you know, get you back to normal as quickly as possible.
So one of the other patterns you look at is types of burn, the patterns that change with age. When you see a child with a burn, you might suspect child abuse. Whereas an older person might spill grease in the kitchen or put something in the microwave and sip on or eat, you know, grilled cheese sandwich and burn their mouth. Tell us about those patterns, if you would.
Sure. So newborns, of course, are totally dependent on others. So if you can't even, you know, move and you're totally dependent, unfortunately, sometimes we do see accidents with them. But also sometimes, unfortunately, we do see child abuse. So it's always something we have to think about. As they start to become toddlers and walking around more, they want to be more like mom and dad. They'll grab the cup of coffee and pull it down on them. They're running around the kitchen and may hit the pan that the handle's out, and that'll fall on them, and they get burned that way. As you start to become teenagers, unfortunately, we do a little more stupid things and a little bit more accidental injuries. And same thing with adults, where they're accidentally, usually from cooking. We see a lot of accidents from cooking. Most of the ones we see in the office are actually cooking accidents from the kitchen. And also we see at that age, when you're an adult, work accidents. As you start to get a little bit older, unfortunately, yes, things happen. You fall in the shower and hit the hot water going down, so it's accidental. But unfortunately, sometimes we also will see elder abuse, which is very unfortunate. Mm-hmm.
And so if you see maybe the bottom of a little child that they were dipped in scalding water, or circular burns that match a cigarette or a cigar tip, that might raise the flag, treat the child, and then look into circumstances, or as you say, elder abuse, or just plain accidents. So minor burns usually can be managed as an outpatient, but sometimes have to go to a burn center. Maybe they have a minor burn that doesn't heal after a week or so. We're going to talk about that a little bit later, but I think it's important for listeners to know, what should someone do immediately at home or at work until they get to the emergency department or at least their primary care doc? What are the things you say? Absolutely.
Well, of course, the first thing is to remove yourself from danger. So if it is a house fire, of course, get out of the house. If there is, something else going on, of course, if you're stuck in a tub, you want to get out of the hot tub. After that, you want to cool the burn. And you want to cool the burn with tepid water, cool water, for about 20 minutes is what is taught. So running it, if you have a hand burn, you want to run it under tepid water, cool water, for about 20 minutes. And that'll cool the burn. It'll keep the heat from spreading in the tissue and causing more damage. You want to stay away from things like ice and ice water. And I will tell you, a lot of my patients we see in the emergency room come in with their hands in an ice bucket or, you know, a pot or a bowl of ice, because it does feel good. The problem with that is you're burned, your sensation is abnormal. And I've actually seen people who have given themselves frostbite. And I had one poor woman who ended up having some amputations of some fingers because she was soaking her hand in this ice cold water. So just remember, no ice, cool water for about 20 minutes. At this point also, you know, things like when people say put butter on it, we don't like butter because it could actually keep the heat in. So you just want to cover it with something cool and dry. If you have some antibiotic ointment, you can use that, especially after you run it under the 20 minutes of water. So you want to cool it first. And then you can use something along the lines of an antibiotic ointment. If the clothing is stuck, if, you know, your shirt caught fire, because, you know, we see a lot of people that may reach across the stove, catch with their shirts on fire. And if it sticks, don't pull it off. It'll get us to the, you know, the hospital. We'll really wet it up very well, so that way it's not pulling off deeper tissue that may still be viable.
Good points. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, more about treating burn injuries with Dr. Bill Hughes from the Jefferson Burn Center.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We just marked Fire Prevention Week, and we are thrilled to have the company of Dr. Bill Hughes from the Jefferson Burn Center helping us with what people should do immediately when they've suffered a burn injury. And we talked about no ice, because that your sensation is not perfectly normal, and you can cause frostbite, even gangrene, and we don't want to see that happen. You want to don't try to take any clothing off that's stuck. We'll work on that in the emergency room. So now the patient has come to the emergency room or a burn center, and you're going to concern yourself with cooling the injury. I guess the other thing we should mention, Bill, you have to consider other injuries. As you say, have they been in a house fire? Have they been in a car accident? Have they inhaled carbon monoxide? Or do they have an internal injury? We have to always, in a trauma center, think of that first. But then you want to cool the wound. Maybe at the site of the incident, should the person cover their wound with wet gauze or towels until they get to the ER? Or do they leave it open? I guess that depends on the size of the burn as well.
If we could back up for 1 second, we just said something very important about other trauma. About 5% of burns have associated trauma. So, you know, people who jumped out of a window to escape a fire or in a car accident. So our larger burns come in to us even as a trauma, where they're seen by the trauma team themselves. I do trauma, so, you know, we see them, we lay eyes on them and make sure that we don't miss those associated traumas. So yes, that's very important. You asked me a second part of the question. Unfortunately, I just forgot what it was.
Oh, just while the person's in transit, does the ambulance, or should they put a wet gauze or towel over the site to keep it from being exposed?
We have actually gotten away from using wet dressings. After we cool them for that 20 minutes after they're washed down, then we use warm, dry dressings. And this is what we also teach in transfers during our, you know, advanced burn life support, is warm, dry dressings. Because when you lose your skin, it's very difficult for you to regulate your temperature. And if you use a wet dressing, the heat is removed a lot faster. And you can actually cool down quite a bit. I remember when I started doing burns, you know, 30 years ago, we would sometimes get people 88, 89 degrees because they had these wet dressings on. So no, after they're cool, just warm, dry dressings, warm blankets.
So you can actually cause hypothermia, and we don't want that.
Exactly,
so
yes.
Pain is an issue too. You're going to elevate a person's hand or foot to prevent more swelling and pain. Tylenol, non-steroidals like Advil kind of meds. Do you ever numb an area with a topical anesthetic or no?
Usually if you have a burn like this, the topical anesthetics are not going to work well. So when you're in the hospital, you know, pain is a reason we would admit people also. So we'll have an IV when they come in the hospital. We will usually use something IV to see how their pain is, to calm them, to make them comfortable. And if they're okay with a small amount and they're comfortable with something by mouth, maybe those are the ones we'll wrap and go home. They're still having a lot of pain. We will continue to admit for pain control. Most of the pain on the, you know, the average size burn is for a couple days when it's the worst. And then it kind of starts to dull itself. Covering the burn helps decrease the pain. So that's also very important. Mm-hmm. And again, even when we send people home, like you mentioned with the anti-inflammatories, we'll have them take them around the clock so it keeps a level of pain control in their system.
Mm-hmm. So we talk about the word debridement. That means that as a wound continues, either progresses or starts to heal, we're going to see sloughing, dead skin, necrotic skin, meaning it's died, or ruptured blisters, because you want to remove that dead skin. Those remnants can increase infection and limit the contact of an antibiotic. So blisters themselves, we do not want people to break their blisters with a fingernail or a needle, because that bumps the risk for infection, right?
Yes, the problem is a lot of people will stick a pin in a blister, and even if they heat it, it will still produce bacteria, and it could get infected. Yeah. So what we don't want people to do with themselves. Now, fortunately, that blister, that top layer of skin, doesn't have any nerve cells, so we can remove it very easily without causing the patient pain. Because sometimes, you know, with the palm, with the sole of the foot, they can get very thick because of the skin, and they don't break easy. So, you know, in the office, they may have a very large blister. We're going to take that blister off, and it's not going to hurt. And it doesn't. I always tell people, if it hurts, I'll stop. So we remove most of the blister, not all the way back, because that's where the nerve fibers are. And we'll cover it that way. That way, our dressings, our antibiotic creams, our silver dressings could be directly on the wound and do their job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the larger burns, it's a full thickness. That, of course, is something we will debride in the operating room, because we have to get down to healthy bleeding tissue, and that is going to hurt. So we do that in the operating room under anesthetic for our deeper burns.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I think it's important to mention to people, you already mentioned, like butter. Do not put butter on a burn. It can make it, it can trap some of the heat. And you also don't want people to put egg whites, any of those old, you know, wives' tales remedies, mayonnaise, lavender oil, emu oil, toothpaste. I was reading about the things people used to reach for. Soap and tepid water. Let the professionals take care of it for you. How about topical antibiotics? I'm sure topical steroids, there's no place for them, but topical antibiotics play a role at any level of depth?
Oh, of course. It's our mainstay. So we use topical antibiotics instead of using IV antibiotics. So the reason, if we go back for one second, the reason we don't use steroids, their steroids could mask infection and actually slow down healing and make the skin thicker. So you should not use a steroid on a burn even after it healed. It can open the wound back up. Now, the mainstay of topicals were things like Silvadine, the white burn cream, and we still use a fair amount of it. We'll use antibiotic ointment on the face, or if you're allergic to sulfa, because silver sulfadiazine. Fortunately, these days, though, we have many other dressings. So when you use the Silvadine, it's usually a daily dressing change. We have silver dressings. And as I said, SSD is silver sulfadiazine. Silver is a good antibiotic. So we have multiple silver dressings we can use. And these could stay on the patient, depending on the dressing, for up to a week. So we can see you in the emergency room, wrap you up with this, and it stays on until I see you in my office 4 or 5 days later. You don't have to change it, but you got to keep it clean. And there's many other polymer type dressings that I also use that are, a synthetic skin. I'm saying that in quotes. We can use it on a partial thickness burn. It protects the wound. It seals it and allows it to heal the epithelium to close it up. And as it degrades, it actually turns into lactose, which is raises or lowers the pH and keeps the bacteria at bay.
Interesting, because I know one time we went away as an extended family with sister-in-law and brother-in-law and their children, and my little nephew got in the shower, scalding water burnt part of his torso, and I always carry Silvadine. I know it sounds crazy, but I have a little war chest, and that really helped him. A person comes to the ER, they've had a major trauma as well, you want to update, or even if it's a minor burn, tetanus shot, that's important to be up to date. And as the person heals, Bill, especially if it's a limb, I know you mentioned earlier, occupational therapy, physical therapy, so important, because comfort equals contracture. If you keep your sore arm bent, it's going to freeze that way. So physical therapy early on to prevent that frozen elbow or whatever the limb is, yes?
Oh, definitely. So, you know, a partial thickness, all wounds heal by contracture. The body tries to make the wound smaller so it heals quicker, and it's a defense mechanism. You know, fortunately for smaller burns, second degree burns, it's not as much of a problem. But, you know, if you're burned around your mouth and you don't exercise your face by opening up your mouth really wide, sometimes we see contractures at the corner of the mouth. Especially areas that we do skin grafting, it's very important if it's across the joint. You want to make sure you fully extend and fully flex the area, because as it heals, if you don't move it, like you mentioned, you put it in the position of comfort, it's going to get stuck like that. And then that's an operation later, so I can release it. And our occupational therapists and physical therapists are very in tune to this and will show people exercises depending on where it is. The most difficult area is the neck, because it's very difficult to fully extend your neck all the time. You know, years ago when I did children, we used to turn the TV sets upside down back in the old days when you could do that, and have them rest on their bed on their back with their heads over the edge to really stretch their necks out. Yeah. And it worked pretty well. Oh. So it's very conscientious. And unfortunately, when the patient does this, it hurts a little bit because it's stretching and they don't want to do it, but you have to reinforce, do it, do it, do it. And even after the wound heals, it may, depending on the size of the wound and the injury, it may remodel for up to a year. So they will still feel that contracture every morning when they wake up. And it's very important they do their exercises and stretches in the morning.
And see, that again is the beauty of talking to a person like you with the experience. Even if somebody has multiple fingers or toes, you're going to separate them when you dress them so they don't adhere, they don't stick to each other, they don't become macerated. I know when you remove dressings, a lot of times you use cool water to decrease the pain. There's certain time honored habits that you have that can make treatment better. The therapy to keep motion, hand and foot burns, they're often not considered minor, because if you don't manage them properly, that can cause a serious disability down the road. We have about a minute left. Let's talk about that and oral burns too. Those are two separate categories.
So I think it's very important, like you said, you wrap the fingers individually so they can move them. The feet are difficult because a lot of times it's in older people. They may not have as good blood supply. Diabetes, and there's not a lot of meat there. So as you start to debride, you're down into the tendon and bone a lot quicker. And then lastly, actually, we don't see a lot of oral burns, you know, the pizza where you get the pepperoni. But if it's a large burn from an inhalation, those patients will swell with their larynx, and we need to get them intubated so they're able to breathe.
That's the key. It could compromise your ability to breathe. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, more with Dr. Bill Hughes from the Jefferson Burn Center. And now for your real champion. I call this segment Dancing Dots with Bill McCann. Bill McCann is a man of many talents. He took a chance when he was old enough to have a dream and young enough to take the risk of starting a small business. And in 1992, Dancing Dots Braille Music Technology was born. Bill was born with impaired vision and became completely blind by age 6. And in the 60 years since, most images have faded, but he does understand the concept of color and remembers looking at the moon and trees. He can't recall the faces of his parents, but he still has a sharp image of the big smile, mustache, and goatee of Mitch Miller, host of Sing Along with Mitch, the family TV show from the 1960s, and Bill's own love of music landed him a trumpet for his 9th birthday. Well, he attended St. Lucie Day School for the Blind, where he learned Braille and was nurtured in ways he now realizes prepared him for a wonderful, fulfilling life. In second grade, he was the student selected to greet the principal when she came to visit, which made him feel very special. By fourth grade, he was the angel who played the trumpet in the Christmas play, each an opportunity to use his talents and gain confidence. Well, Bill graduated cum laude from the Philadelphia University of the Arts with a degree in trumpet performance, went on to compose music for orchestras, taught both sighted and blind students to play the trumpet, led his own jazz band, and plays for weddings and special church services. He's also developed great skills in computer science and spent 10 years as a programmer for HR at Sunoco. Well, then he combined his skills in music and technology, and in 1992, started this software company called Dancing Dots, dedicated to improving access to music for blind and low vision performers, helping them to independently read music, write their music down, and record their music. The product GoodFeel is the world's first commercial software that translates sheet music to Braille. The Limelighter software magnifies to help low vision musicians read and write music. The company has expanded to include a series of Braille music courses and equipment for a number of accessible solutions to create professional sounding productions. Bill shares the credit with his brother-in-law, Albert Milani, an electrical engineer who also loves music and plays piano. Together, they built a company with customers across the U.S. and more than 50 other countries. Bill's presented at numerous international conferences, taught at a variety of music camps in the U.S. and Canada, seen in interviews on BBC, the Associated Press, Philadelphia Inquirer, and even at the White House, where he demonstrated the technology to the president and vice president, published numerous articles about his work, and in 2009, he spoke at an international conference at UNESCO in Paris. From 2014 through 17, he was the music director for the Enchanted Hills Summer Music Academy in Northern California and performed and presented in a festival for blind musicians in Morocco in 2019. Well, in 1987, he married his college sweetheart, Marianne Coppa, a gifted concert harpist, and their beautiful harp and trumpet duo was heard at many ceremonies during the 1980s, but later put that aside while they focused on their five children, all of whom play at least one instrument. Welcome, Bill. What a story.
Wow. Thank you, Marianne. Thanks for that summary. I think it was excellent. I just want to add one thing, and that is that, yes, Albert Milani, my brother-in-law, my friend, certainly was a big part of Dancing Dots, but I would not be talking to you without my wife, who way back when I had the chance to leave my day job, actually said, you know what? You're right. Let's go for it. And here we are.
Well, that was my first question, Bill. What motivated you to give up your really good position? You were being promoted, a good paycheck. You had this great position in IT to take the risk of a small business. Was it that Martin Luther King quote you told me about, Martin Luther King Jr.?
That was definitely a big part of it. I remember listening to Dr. King on the radio when I was just maybe 7 or 8 years old. And he had a very emotional speech, and he talked about, you know, when I go, I can't do a real good Dr. King impression. What a voice he had. But it was something like, you know, I want people to know that Martin Luther King tried to help somebody. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. You know, that's a good thing to be remembered by. So, but also part of my motivation was the fact that my plan A was I was going to play the trumpet. Everybody was going to throw the money. We were all going to be happy. And it didn't quite come out that way, although I played the trumpet and made a little money. But in the end, I ended up making my living from programming computers. And I think what was the surprise ending to all that was this idea I'd started in college of, hey, all these people are starting to use computers to print music out. Why can't we turn it into Braille? And we could emboss it on one of these mechanical Braille embossers. And so that dream came together. The good Lord said, you know, I prepared you, go for it. And as I said, the good Lord, my good wife, you know, because we were expecting number two and they paid me every 2 weeks. It was wonderful. And they kept promoting me. My last promotion, by the way, I got an office with a window in it. Of course, I couldn't open the window.
Right.
And I couldn't see through it, but never mind.
But it was a sign of their respect. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So that was kind of fun. But yeah, that motivated me. The idea of helping people. And in the end, the idea of helping myself and my family through the gifts that God gave me and through the opportunities of this great country. And, you know, it all kind of came together. Mm-hmm. And it's been a great adventure. Some years have been really great, and some years have been a bit scary because the small business thing is not for everybody. And some years are just lean, you know, and so you just get through it. But here we are, and Dancing Dots, what did we just turn 32 recently?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, one of the things you said really stuck with me when you said God's blessings are infinite, and that you said about yourself, I don't get to see, but I'm blessed with gifts that so many others don't have. And to hear about your beautiful family also accomplished, what do you say to people who lose their vision later in life and think that life is over? We have about a minute left.
Yes. Well, what I like to try to say is, first of all, I feel your pain. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. This is tough. But I would like to say as well that there's a cliche that says, where there's life, there's hope. And there is. There really is hope. There are a lot of people here who know how to help you with technology, with emotional support, with helping you with skills, everything from, you know, making your bed to just getting around town. And it can be done, and I've seen it done. So, you know, I would just encourage people not to lose heart.
Well, I think that's the best message you can share, Bill, because you were a little boy and you had to adapt early in life, whereas people who lose their vision in their 40s or 50s, they have to learn everything a second time, and you're bringing hope and taking fear out of it. And
exactly.
We really appreciate you sharing your story today, and God bless. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Marianne. Keep up the good work.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
And we're back at Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Bill Hughes, learning so much about the do's and don'ts of treating burns. Bill, a lot of the times people will see their primary care doc and get therapy, sometimes go to the emergency department. When should a patient go to a burn center after they've been evaluated acutely in an ER? Not everybody lives down the street from the Jefferson Burn Center. When is it time for a more specific reason or serious burn?
Sure. And actually, that's a very good question because, you know, we're not a very large specialty. There's only about 130 burn centers in the United States. And there's some states that don't even have a designated burn center. But the American Burn Association says if you have a burn greater than 10% of your body surface area, so about the size of 10 of your palms, if you have a third degree burn of any size, if you have a chemical burn, electrical burn, inhalation burn, the extremes of age, because there may be other problems with children or problems with adults, other medical issues, and also if there's associated trauma, since most of us are also located at a trauma center. Now, a smaller burn, it's not healing, it's still leaking, you see redness going away from the wound, which could be a sign of infection, you should probably come see us a lot earlier. Like I said, fortunately, a lot of partial thickness burns are going to heal in about 2 weeks. But I think many people still aren't sure how deep the burn is, and they think it's going to heal, and it doesn't. And then they come to us a little bit later. Now, not saying if they got to us earlier, it would have healed. But, you know, we could have done the therapy a little bit quicker if they needed surgery to get them back to their normal lifestyle.
So if a burn that you just described, that might manifest in that the burn becomes more painful, yes, that the burning continues. Is that possible? Is that a reason you'd go to a burn center?
Yeah, it's not always a more painful thing. It's a continued leakage. You know, when you have a burn wound, it's an open wound with dead tissue. And of course, the bacteria like that. And if you're not treating it correctly with the proper topicals, they'll eventually become invasive and you would get an infection. And, you know, that even with a partial thickness burn, an infection can make the wound deeper. So, you know, those are the problems. The big problems, if you wait long, it's going to be more scarring and there's a higher risk of infection.
So I guess burns on the face, hands and fingers, we said hands and feet, or the genital area, I would think they are special enough to go to a burn center. Or how about if a burn encircles an arm or a leg or a foot? I mean, full circle must be need special attention as well, yes?
Sure. The other reasons to see a burn specialist, just what you said, the American Burn Association does also say those specialized areas, the groin, the hands, the feet, the face, the perineum. Mm. Most burns include one of those areas. What we worry about if you have a full thickness circumferential burn, and these are usually what we'll see in a larger size injury, when you get a burn that's more than 20%, it becomes more of a systemic problem, and your capillaries become very leaky. That's when we resuscitate people, and you become very edematous and swollen. And if you have a third degree burn, the elastin in the skin is destroyed, so it doesn't stretch. So you can't pinch it. It's like leather, and it can act like a tourniquet. Oh. And as it becomes more swollen, you don't have blood return. You don't have blood inflow. It can become an ischemic extremity. So that is one of the early procedures we do are called escharotomies, where we incise laterally and medially on an extremity. So it releases. So there's more blood flow. We'll do it across the chest to make the person easier to breathe, so the rib cage can't expand. When that tissue starts to become edematous, it's more difficult for the rib cage to expand against that tight leather jacket.
Because there's a rubber band around their chest or their limb.
More than a rubber band, because it doesn't stretch. Yeah. It's more like I say, like a tight leather jacket, where it just doesn't want to. It doesn't stretch at all.
So I can guess the answer, but when does a patient need surgery? When they have those full thickness injuries, where they lose their epidermis, their dermis, and the subcutaneous fat. Are they the folks that you think right away? And I would think maybe like a little child who is dipped or by accident gets into a hot bathtub and they burn their little bottoms and all. Do you wait to operate, or how do you determine who needs surgery and when?
Sure. So, yes, the main reason we do surgery are on the full thickness burns. Now, when we have our larger size injuries, we usually would try to get them grafted within a week, because they could get infected early and cause a lot of problems. So with our large burns, you know, our 50, you know, the ones that we resuscitate, that 15, 20% burns, if they're in with us, they have a full thickness, we excise that and get them covered with their own skin or something temporary. Usually we try to do that within the first 6 days, so very quickly. Now, if it's a smaller burn, you know, you're on your friend's motorcycle and your calf hits that hot exhaust pipe, it's a smaller size burn. Oof. You know, that could wait a couple of weeks before we graft it. It's not going to get as infected as quickly. Now, the other things that we operate on that we may not skin graft are a larger burn that's a partial thickness that's going to require, you know, dressings for a while. We can take you to the operating room, clean that up very nicely while you're asleep, and then put on one of my synthetic skins. Makes it a lot easier, so you don't have to change that dressing daily. Mm-hmm.
So we said earlier, October 6th through 12th, marked Fire Prevention Week 2024. You mentioned earlier you want to, when you're cooking in the kitchen, try to put the pan with the handle of the pot, turn the handle in or put it on the back burner, especially with little children who run around and they want to imitate mommy and daddy and grab the cup of coffee. They pull hot liquids over. And obviously you're going to keep lit candles, matches, lighters out of the reach of children. If you're on supplemental oxygen, probably not a good match to pull out a cigarette and smoke. Don't smoke if you're sleepy or if you're taking sleeping pills or if you're drinking heavily. What are some of the other tips that can help prevent these injuries?
You hit on a lot of them, but I think another important thing, and in the kitchen, a lot of people, sometimes the oil in the pan will catch fire and they will try to get it outside or put it in the sink. And that's the worst thing to do. It spills on them. You trip when you're carrying it. Other things catch on fire. When you're cooking, have that lid close by. And if it catches on fire, put the lid on top so it smothers it. Or have a fire blanket. Perfect. So it smothers it. Now, with the holidays coming up, of course, with Halloween, use a battery-operated light instead of candles, especially around children. Make sure their costumes are not anywhere near something that's flammable. With Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving is actually our biggest holiday where we see our most burns, because what happens is a lot of times those little pans will, with the 20-pound turkey, it's made to hold something 5 pounds, it folds and all that hot juice gets on the legs and the feet.
True.
So be very careful. And again, Christmas time, same thing. Be very careful with the candles. Put them on a plate in case they crack so they don't get all over the place. And, you know, enjoy yourself, but just be very safe. Mm-hmm.
I like your suggestion to set your thermostat for your hot water heater no higher than 120 degrees Fahrenheit or 49 degrees centigrade, I think. Because if you can't adjust the hot water heater, you can install an anti-scald device in your shower or bathroom mm-hmm. or your faucet there.
Right. So 150 degree water, that's Fahrenheit, not Celsius. It's not even boiling. Right. Could give you a very deep graftable burn in a matter of a second or two. And your body can tolerate temperatures up to about, you know, 120. So you want to keep your thermostat set there so it accidentally doesn't get higher. And of course, children and the geriatric population have thinner skin. So it doesn't burn us, may burn them. So keeping it around 120 is a very safe. Burns are a time temperature dependency. So, you know, even if it's 125 degrees, if it's on you for a long enough time, it'll cause damage. Mm-hmm. And of course, something very hot needs much less time.
Well, and the common sense things like get smoke detectors on every floor of your home. They're inexpensive. Check the batteries once a month. Do something. Put up a calendar, something. It could save your life. My dear sister and brother-in-law lost their house in a fire from a Pop-Tart in a toaster. Their son didn't pull the toaster out from under the cabinet, and voila. Fortunately, no one died. They had a beautiful attitude. They said, we're all still here. No one injured, but some of these things sometimes can be prevented, not always. Children's sleepwear should be non-flammable. We hear that, but I was reading that another great suggestion, cotton sleepwear should fit snugly. You don't want it to be loose for that very reason as well, yeah?
True. Unfortunately, they relaxed some of the standards recently, and I don't know why. But yes, if it's tighter fitting, there's less chance the air is going to get underneath. Interestingly enough, when polyester burns, it kind of melts and it looks like little leopard spots. When the cotton burns, we see more of a, you know, almost like a flame burn type, where it's more congruent. So we could, you know, when I used to do children, you could always tell what kind of clothes they were wearing by their burn pattern.
And you want to cover car seats, seat belts, strollers with a blanket or a towel. I think people often forget that after they've left their car parked on a hot day. You want to be careful when you put that little child in the seat, because the metal, the vinyl, can become super hot. And we talked about turning handles of cookware so that they're pointed inward. But don't forget curling irons, things in the bathroom that can really burn any people of any age, but little children who think they want to make their hair pretty like mommy. And of course, sunscreen. What's the famous three-word advice when somebody has caught fire?
Stop, drop, and roll is very important. If your clothes are on fire, you want to stop and roll, because that rolling action will smother the flame so it doesn't have oxygen. And it's unfortunate. We've seen people who were outside who caught fire and ran around and had very deep burns, very severe burns, where you should stop, drop, and roll. It's taught at a young age. It's still very important.
Yeah. Well said, Bill. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, our final segment on injuries from burns.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor, which we call Your Weekly Prescription. Bill, we have learned so much about burn injuries, how we can prevent them to the best of our abilities, and what to do at the immediate site of the burn, and then all the wonderful applications you offer in a burn center. What's your take-home message for our listeners?
People need to know the important thing about a burn center is not just myself. I have a fantastic team, and burns have always been very team-oriented. I have our nutritionist to help because, you know, you need a lot more calories, and we have to get them into you. We have our occupational physical therapist to help you get out of bed, to get you to use your hands. I have a wonderful nursing staff. I have, you know, pharmacists, and we all work together to make the best plan possible for the patient. And I think that's very important. And I think that's one thing that you don't have at a non-burn center. We have the resources.
Well, I think it's, as you mentioned, that wouldn't enter somebody's mind necessarily to realize with all that hyper metabolism, when we say catabolism, you're burning calories when your body's reacting to all that inflammation. Some of these patients eat up to 5,000 calories a day. And so you can't eat that much comfortably, but with TPN or total parenteral, meaning IV nutrition, they need protein to heal. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, it's the biggest metabolic burn injury or biggest metabolic trauma you can have, even much more so than multiple fractures. So, yeah, we have to get those calories into you. And eventually it gets to a point where they're as an outpatient where they don't need the calories and they kind of start putting a little weight on and we say time to relax it.
Yeah. And Bill, if people wanted to see you at the burn center, the number is 215-955-2165. We'll repeat that at the end. Or you can just go to your browser and look up Jefferson Burn Center. And if you really forget, you can reach anybody at Jefferson by calling 1-800-JEFF-NOW, J-E-F-F-NOW. Bill, if you would, tell us about the work you've been doing in Africa.
Sure. So a couple of years ago, I went on a trip over to Sierra Leone when they had a fire disaster. As part of, there was about five international teams there. And I was over for 8 days to help out and took care of these patients. And it was a very humbling experience because a lot of these countries don't have what we have. And, you know, they don't have the operating theaters that we could get them to. They don't even have things like dialysis or ventilators. So when I was operating on patients, the anesthesiologist was actually hand bagging them, like in the old days, wasn't even a ventilator. So it was very humbling and has helped out, learned a lot myself. It was kind of the old time burn care from the 70s that I learned from Dr. DeClement. Fortunately, we have advanced. I remain friends with a couple of the people I worked with and have actually formed a charity to help them in their countries to get supplies and resources so they could better take care of their patients.
And what's the charity, Bill?
Hughes Burn Charities.
Hughes Burn Charities. Can people find that online if they want to help you?
Unfortunately, I'm not online, but
maybe they could call your office.
We do have it. You know, you could always call the office and we can tell you how to do something.
Well, a very special thank you to you, Dr. Bill Hughes. We've learned so much and you've reminded us to be grateful for the gifts we have, especially our health. Thanks for joining us, Bill. Call 215-955-2165 to see Dr. Bill Hughes and his team at the Jefferson Burn Unit. Thanks, Bill.
Oh, thank you very much. It was an honor.
Thank you for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday afternoon at 5 here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen to all of our shows again on Audacy.com. That's AUDACY.com. A special thank you to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, for their continued support and their faith in my content. Halloween is near. Say boo to the flu. Get your flu shot, please. And join our Diapers for Darling campaign. Donate a bag of disposable diapers to a needy mother. Website, yougivegoods.com. The diapers are delivered to Catholic Social Services of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, but be assured, the diapers are shared with mothers of all faiths and backgrounds. What they have in common is the need for our help. YouGiveGoods.com. And please remember to pray for peace in our world. in our beloved country, in our families, and in each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. And always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.